Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. I was talking to Anne a few days ago, and we decided that we should run an end-of-year radio special. 2010 has been an interesting and yet very frustrating year. This afternoon, we're going to be looking at several different stories. We've assembled a great panel. I do have to point out that we are scrambling at the moment. Blog Talk Radio always chooses the absolute worst times to not play ball, shall we say. But we're going to plow on. Joining me for certain, because she's sat about 3 feet away from me, is my wife, Jan. Jan, hi.
Hi, Simon. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our show.
Okay, let's see who we actually do have on the phone. It looks like, and I am guessing, we have Dave Johnson.
Hi, Simon. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well indeed. Now, some of you may not know Dave, but I can assure you that he is an interesting character, and he's not calling in from Kansas. He's a pilot and a private military contractor. I would tell you where he is, but then I'd have to kill you all. Dave is at the pointy end of the war on drugs and the war on terror. Dave, I'm so glad you finally managed to get through to our switchboard.
Yes, sir. It took about 12 calls, but I finally made it.
I do apologize. I do believe that we have the infamous William Cobra Storbs on the line. Bill, is that you?
Yes, sir. And like Dave, I probably called 20 times. I started about 3:45 and something's wrong. I had to wait till you went live and then connected.
Right. Yeah, like I said, Blog Talk Radio picks the absolute worst times to create havoc.
Well, Dave and I are using encrypted services.
Right. I think that coming in from Las Vegas, Nevada, we have the crime doctor himself, Denny Griffin. Denny, is that you on the line?
It is me, Simon, and hello to you and Jan and Dave and Cobra. And I don't know if it's my end or yours, but you're cutting out every few words, so hopefully it's just a problem on my end. But I am glad to be with you again and appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. I am hoping that Peter Hyatt is with us. Peter, is that you coming in from area code 200?
It is himself.
Okay.
I detect deception.
I was getting just a tad nervous there for a couple of minutes. I am also hoping that ace reporter TJ Hart will be joining us. I know that right at this moment in time, he's out doing his favorite thing, which is shopping for cars. But,
That's right. That's what he told me, too.
I swear that man spends more time shopping for cars than anyone I've ever met.
I told him, I sent him back a text and told him if he's buying a Lamborghini, hello, I'm Liberace.
And I do want to say hello to all of our listeners. Our phone lines are open, and we do welcome your questions and comments. Our switchboard number is area code 646 3781120. I do ask that you be patient with us if you do call in. The alternative is to join our chat room, and we will be monitoring that for any questions. I know that many of you that are listening are here for our comments on the Hayley Cummings case, so I guess that's probably where we will start. Jan and I decided to stop reporting on the case for actually three reasons. One, we'd had enough of the personal attacks. Two, news other than various members of the Crosling clan getting busted for completely unrelated drug problems, really there wasn't any news. Also, we had other projects that we needed to move on to. I'm sure most of you knew these reasons, but I thought it was important to explain them. Jan, I want to start with you. In your opinion, has Hayley Cummings become just another cold case?
Well, that's kind of a tricky question for some. I think it has. Of course, I'm not in the police department. I'm not in the detective's office checking to see if they're actually doing anything on the case or not. But there's no news, nothing whatsoever about Hayley. Yeah, you hear something about Misty and Ronald and all the Croslins, but you never hear anything anymore about where's Hayley, how are they going to find Hayley, or how are they going to find Hayley. And so far, nobody's been arrested, and you don't hear nothing. Like I said, you don't hear anything anymore, so we're kind of forced into looking at it like that it must be being treated like a cold case, and that breaks my heart.
Peter, I'm going to rephrase the question for you. The cops basically have rounded up what appears to be their top suspects, and they've put the gears to them on these drug charges. They sit behind bars, and they're likely to remain there for quite a number of years. In your view, do you think it's the end of the case?
I do. Unfortunately, I think that there's not a lot they can do. This was an unusual case from the point of media and media involvement, and I think this is part of the hangover of the O.J. Simpson saga. And the reason I say that, Simon, is because there were careers that were made on the murder of Nicole Brown and her friend Ron Goldman. There were careers that were made in media on that. And I think that the Hayley Cummings case, it attracted a lot of media attention because the characters involved in it were just that. They were characters. And I think that media became cutthroat in their reporting as everyone was tripping over each other trying to get some story. Lost in all that was, I think, the five-year-old girl. But I do think that law enforcement, at least, feel that they have the two principal subjects of the demise of Hayley Cummings in prison, and the perhaps the conspirator after the fact also in prison. And they're in prison for a very long time. I do think that we have the story of what happened. And you know, from my position, in terms of when people make up a lie, even choosing the language they do becomes revelatory. So I think we have a good idea, and I think COBRA has provided a lot of insight into the culture and into some of the words and the language. He had some real intimate conversations with Ronald. And I think enough of that and some of the solid reporting we saw from TJ, the constant source of news provided by you and Jan, I think we've gotten a big picture, Simon. I really do. I think we have an understanding of what happened.
Denny, I want to ask you the same question, but a slightly different way. You and I both know that occasionally a crime is solved many years after the event, and certainly that was true for Paul Scharf. In a small way, he has achieved closure for the death of his father and Patricia Freeman. Is that kind of our best hope for the Haley Cummings case? Something will happen years from now?
I'm still having trouble, so I'm only catching a word from you guys. I think I can. Down the road, hope that in the Scharf case, what, 27 years after the murders. So the problem is it certainly doesn't do much, you know, for deserve, I think, to get answers. I guess if the case breaks or the crime is years or 30 years. But
I'll tell you what, Denny. Why
no
don't you,
around.
Denny? Why don't you try hanging up and calling back in? I've got a feeling the problem is with the line to you.
Okay, I'll try to get back in.
Okay,
that worked.
All right.
That worked for me, Denny. So that might work out well.
Cobra, putting aside personal feelings, and I know it's a hard thing to do, but you're an investigator by trade, and it's often said that the pivotal time in a criminal investigation is the first 48 to 72 hours. Do you think law enforcement did enough in the early stages?
Yes, I do. I think that they did far more than most agencies did, and I think that it's right now. It probably is. I'm going to go ahead and finish that question from Denny and the other guys. I think it is a cold case, but also, like they say, remember the Alamo. I just say remember O.J. Simpson. I mean, will we ever find out what really happened to Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman? Will we really, 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 really ever find that out? I don't know, but I think enough of the picture has been painted that we know, or we surmise that we know what has happened. And justice is a funny thing. You know, it'll show up and get you. I think that all cream eventually comes to the top, and no evil that has been buried will ever stay buried. Eventually, the entire truth will come out. But I think that the key players and the ones that are involved are sitting happily behind jail, you know, happily to us, not so happy to them, but I think that it's a O.J. Simpson type situation where justice come and get you, you know, and I think that's what happened. And do I think the law enforcement, I think they still quandary about it. There's some that were very close to it. I was close to a few of the investigators there that had many, 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 many sleepless nights over it. Especially Sheriff Hardy, brand new in office, a child comes up missing, and you know it, all the buck stops at his feet. So yeah, I think that it's taken its toll. Everybody did the best that they could possibly do, and you know, I put my personal feelings aside. I know that I did the best that I could possibly do, and like you and Jan, y'all did the best. And we call a lot of rhetoric for it, you know, and stuff like that. But eventually, I think justice was served on the main players. Period.
One thing that, you know, I have to say is that, you know, I wrote many articles where I cited sources close to the investigation. That was not bullshit, but I could not and will not name the names. But I was genuinely impressed with the amount of effort that law enforcement put in. I mean, they really did their best.
Their sweat equity was what impressed me. I mean, resources are easy if the government steps in and everybody throws resources. That's easy to spend money. It was a sweat equity. And the actual feelings, I mean, they went at this thing as if it was their own child. So, yeah, there's a lot to be said on this case, and I've studied other cases, and I haven't really seen that intensity into that particular end like it was in this case. And they really, really did, and they caught pure hell for them. They called hell from the press. They called hell from me. They called hell from everybody, you know, because everybody was pushing, I mean, for this child. This child, just something about this child took everybody's attention and really made it personal for some reason. This was actually a personal case to many folks, myself included, very personal.
I think we have Denny back with us. Denny, do we have a better line?
I am not only back, Simon, but I've come to the conclusion you were a technological genius. I'm able to hear everything. Thanks for that advice.
That'd be more good.
But, you know, I'm gonna bounce the same question off you that I did Cobra. You know, this whole idea that, you know, the key time is that first 48 to 72 hours. Now, you, I, and everyone else in the press really didn't get heavily involved until somewhat later than that. But I know that you've looked at the, you know, the goings on, if you will. Do you think that law enforcement could have done more in those early hours?
You know, I think if you probably people, uninvolved people such as me, could always look at virtually any case that ends up going cold or is solved promptly and find some fault or some question about. But I think overall, I really believe the Sheriff's Department was in this, and they were in it to win it, and I really had no major complaint regarding their handling of the case. That's not to say that even they, if they look back at it and say, yeah, you know, maybe that wasn't the first response, or by the next day we could have done this or should have done that, but I don't think it was, you know, any malfeasance on their part or incompetence or anything like that. And again, you can always Monday morning quarterback and go back and think of something that, knowing what you know now, maybe you should have done something a little more or a little different. But I'm going to cast no stones on the police investigation.
Dave, I know that you are not up to speed on this case, but just based on your background, are you in agreement that, you know, after a major crime, that key window of opportunity is in, you know, the hours right after?
Oh yeah, that's where you do your most good, and just like the others were saying, you can't blame somebody for their performance if they come in and do the best they can do with what they've got.
Peter, I want you to weigh in. I know that, you know, again, you weren't involved, I don't think, anyway, in the very early days, but I know you've done your homework. Do you think balls were dropped, or do you think Ellie did the very best they could?
I don't know that we can ever say, at least for myself, that I've ever done my very best at anything. I think, like Denny, I look back as a Monday morning quarterback and say, I could have done this or I could have done that, just a little extra. And I'm sure they're doing the same. Overall, I agree with the other panelists that they're not to have stones thrown at them. In looking at it, if our reference point is something like the JonBenet Ramsey case, where law enforcement completely blew it from the first few hours, I think that there were some things that could have been done. But here's something in defense of them. What I think could have been done early on was to have been a lot more heavy-handed on Misty Crosland. I think that Mr. Croslin threw a lot of us, and myself included, by surprise. I thought she'd crack within a week in jail. I really did. She is a lot tougher than I thought. But we had indications from the first few hours. If you remember, she gave an interview to media, I think it was the next day, the, you know, the next daylight, I should say, because it was the middle of the night. And we had an immediate indication that Haley Cummings was deceased from the get-go, right from the first time that she spoke to media. And those early words are important. They don't change. We had that with the Susan Smith. So we had it right from the very beginning. We had the fact that, that. Then we had later on Misty Croslin failing and Tommy failing a polygraph. And when you think about the polygraph, it's done in two ways. The first way is they will interview her to discover what her language is. And so she knows just maybe 15 or 20 minutes before the polygraph every question that's going to be asked of her. It's very simple. And so, Misty, do you know what happened to Haley? No. And she fails. Her body reacts under stress. Misty, did you cause Haley's disappearance? No. Her body reacts and she fails that. And so I don't fault them in the sense that they could not have known how tough and how she was going to hang in there and how closed-mouthed these people were going to be. But there are always things we can look back and say, you know, we could have tried this or we could have tried that.
I know that you...
No, I just wanted to ask Peter to tell us there was a lot of people that were asking the question, what was the first indicator that we knew the child was deceased? And it was a past tense speaking. If I'm wrong, Peter, let me know. But when she said, I loved that little girl, yeah, I knew it right then and there. And am I wrong or right, Peter?
No, you're correct. And I know that sometimes people will dismiss that as saying that's just a small pointer. That's not what she meant. But our verb tenses are learned when we're 2, 3, 4 years old. When we interview children, for instance, they have a very difficult time gauging how far in the past something took place, measuring time. What they don't mistake is past tense. And so we have learned through 80 years of polygraphs that when a caretaker, mother, father, anyone close to a missing child uses past tense, they believe or have knowledge that the child is dead. What that means in Misty's case is we could ask her, you know, why do you believe that she's dead? Since she was alone, she would have knowledge of that. There have been cases where a father of a missing child has lost hope, and he begins to use past tense. It doesn't mean that he knows that she's dead. It means that he believes it. But that's never within the first 48 hours, never. I mean, we have cases of mothers that, who long after the baby's body has been found, will still slip into present tense language. They just can't. They're in denial. We saw the recent case of Elizabeth Johnson, baby Gabriel, where the father, Logan, was on the phone with her. She told him what happened to the baby, what she did to the baby, that he was dead. And she told him in plain language, no qualifiers, nothing. She was telling the truth. She passes the truth test. She suffocated the baby and put him in a garbage bag. I shared that information with law enforcement. I gave them the analysis. Their response was that we have credible evidence that baby Gabriel is alive. And they didn't. And they refused to acknowledge that. And now a year later, of course, they know differently. But the dad, Logan McQuarrie, he denied it. He said, no, he's not. And he spoke in present tense because he just could not accept that his son was dead. So with Misty, it was from the get-go. Cobra, that interview that we're both citing, was that the next morning?
No, I think that was a little bit later. And in the exact same interview I conducted with Art Harris, and she used the same words exactly. No, did you do anything? I loved that little girl. And it was always past tense. She never was in the future. And I even tried to correct her at one point. I said, you love her, right? And she caught herself, but then she went right back to it again. So then I knew. I said, the child. That's why I started saying the child's dead. Of course, everybody hates me now. But I said, no, the child is definitely dead.
Yeah,
we have a very special guest that has just called in. TJ, did you buy a car?
Hey. Yes.
Oh, boy.
Yes, I did. Got very famous to my wife and family, finally, after 18 months.
Is it the same one you had the picture on Facebook?
Yes, it is.
Beautiful car. Congratulations.
I know they're cleaning it up. I looked at Simon. I said, "Oh my God! I promised Simon and everybody I'd be on the show today. I better get moving here." So
you feel lucky, cowboy.
TJ, I'm so glad that you managed to carve out a few minutes to be with us. We miss you. we decided to kick off the program with a little discussion about Hayley Cummings. I know that, you know, that there's no breaking news or anything, just breaking hearts. You know, what are your thoughts about 2010 and the search for Hayley? Do you think it's now a cold case?
Well, I think it's probably lukewarm at best, and that's unfortunate. I think that the belief, without having any official statement or policy, is that investigators are of the mind, for the most part, that those responsible for her disappearance and or her death are now behind bars. We'll find out in early 2011 just how many years in prison Misty, the babysitter, will get for her drug offenses, because they're all in on drug offenses. We thought that there would be several breaks in the case, especially in the spring, early summer, when the St. John's River was being dredged, and Misty and Tommy were spotted at the scene with police, of course. And you had all kinds of claims being made by the grandmother of Flo Hollers about possibly where the child would be. But I was listening in just before I was introduced about the speech patterns. And one of the first things I remember is day one or two, Misty was sitting with her mother, and she said, "I would never do anything to hurt that. I would have never done anything to hurt that little girl." And it was in that tense that, you know, it was past tense. So I don't know if that was someone who was having a problem with grammar, or if that was someone who knew the child had been harmed, if not fatally harmed. So it was one of those things where you kept holding out hope all year long, and for the last 2 years holding out hope. And I did, because you never want to think the worst. You never want to think that a child is dead.
Now, you and I have talked about this on a few occasions. Misty comes across as being the stupid 17-year-old who hasn't got two synapses firing. And I'm certainly bought into that concept. And yet, you bumped into her. I think it was in the green room of a CNN studio. And
yeah, it was.
Yeah, and you know, you said, "Whoa, yeah, this is a girl that, you know, might not have her grade 12, but she's no one's idiot."
Oh no, she's no one's fool. I mean, she's got her PhD in street smarts. I'll tell you that right off the bat. I mean, you buy into the sympathy thing, and she can turn on her personalities. I think she's got about a half a dozen of them. But she can turn into any one of those personalities at any time she needs, and I think that might have been a way of self-protection through many years of dealing with the family that's had problems with the drugs and alcohol, and also, you know, later on in her life with some of the criminal element that she was hanging out with. She might have done that for survival. I understand that she's also been, you know, she was also harmed by a great number of people in her past, sexually harmed. And it might be a defense mechanism, but she's got about a half a dozen personalities, and she can switch them just like that.
And Peter, I know that you have slogged your way through many of the transcripts involved in this case. Without getting into any detail, is anyone telling the damn truth?
When Misty said... Because TJ pointed that out well. When Misty said, "I would never harm her," There was two elements involved there that said to me that she was telling the truth. And this is something that really shocks people. When a person of guilt in a homicide, especially a domestic homicide, tells you that they would not, future tense, do something, and the second thing they do is they minimize it. And we see this in child abuse and child deaths all the time. I would not hurt the child. I would not, future tense. And the reason they would not is because the child can't be hurt any longer. And notice we're talking about hurt versus murder. So we have two elements there. But for Misty Croslin, we had, and I'll be brief with this, Simon, we had a big picture. I'll say this. Their words spoke the truth. Even if they meant to be deceptive, their words told us what happened.
Another thing that has happened, too, that are investigators kind of close to the very close to the case, have indicated in the past that there are some very grave similarities in this case to the Anthony case, and only time will tell just how similar these two cases are. Once they're both resolved, he said that the similarities are going to be very, very frightening.
Jen, I want to ask you a question. You're not nearly as hard-nosed as the rest of us, all right? You tend to look not just at the possible perpetrators of a crime, but the effect that a crime has on the entire family. This case has changed many, many lives. I do not want you to break any confidences, so please don't mention any names. But I know that you sometimes talk with a family member. Do you think the press was unnecessarily mean to the extended family?
Well, yeah, I do. You know, we tend to forget that the families aren't the one that, I mean, well, of course, nobody is accusing the family of being a part of this, other than, I'm talking about the extended family, not certain ones. But really, I mean, they're grieving for their grandchild. The grandparents are the cousins, the aunts and the uncles. They're all grieving for this child. And it's hard on them. I mean, they can't even come out and speak without somebody analyzing everything that they're saying, oh, well, look, you know, they're not doing this and they're not doing that, or they are doing this and they are doing that for a reason. And it is, it's rough on them. And this time of year, I don't know, I do have a soft heart, and I think that all the differences should be put aside and let these families alone this time of year especially. Leave them alone, let them grieve the way they want to and the way they have to. And but also remember, too, that there's other children that's involved in these families, members, the family, that they have to put on a face for. You know, so just because they're smiling and all that doesn't mean that they're not, that they've forgotten her. And they have to do this for the other children. And I don't know, Simon, you really caught me, because this is a very touchy thing, because personally, I still have a hard time believing that she's dead. And I still look at the same way that I always have, and until they have somebody arrested and charged, I'll never believe that they have the right person until they arrest somebody for that. And if Misty or Tommy or Ronald or one of them are responsible for this, the years that they have in jail right now aren't enough, because there's always probation, there's always parole or whatever it is. They get out so many days out for after a while that's not enough. They need to be punished more than that, and to be punished more than that, they have to be charged with the right thing, or Haley will never receive any justice if she is dead.
Well, okay, Denny. I'm going to toss this one at you. I have a theory, and it's no more than a theory, but I apply it to both the Anthony case and the Haley Cummings case, had someone stepped up to the plate, my theory is that they would have ended up in court and pled guilty to an accidental, killing of some description, and I believe that they would have, at worst, got a slap on the wrist and a stern talking to and some probation time, rather than, 15 years behind bars. Well, do you subscribe to that idea?
I think that's the way the system works. The key, of course, would have been someone coming forward and telling the truth. Because if they told a story to make themselves appear that they were involved not in an intentional murder but a criminally negligent situation or manslaughter situation, and the story was so flimsy it could be disproved and an intentional homicide proved, then I certainly don't think the prosecution would have gone along with that type of plea bargain. But if this was an accidental type thing or an unintended, maybe a negligence somehow involved, then I think you're 100% right. Gone in the door right off the bat and said, here's what happened, it was a terrible thing, but yes, I believe they could have gotten some kind of a minimal sentence and probation situation. Yes, I think you're right on that.
Peter, would you buy into that argument?
I do. I think there's some states in the union where they would have gotten a heavier sentence for harming an animal, a dog or a cat, than they would for a child. I think the only problem with that theory is that had they come forward to say that Haley got into one of our pills, they wouldn't have a script for the pill, and that would have maybe set off some of the drug investigation that was going on. Had they been able to produce someone's script for OxyContin, for instance, and then said that Haley got into it and we panicked and we covered up even afterwards, I still think that you're right. They would not have received anywhere near the type of sentence that they could have had.
I do have to tell all of our listeners this. It would appear that even though it's been a couple of months since we have run this program, TJ still hasn't bought himself a new cell phone. I just noticed that he went off the grid, no doubt with a flat battery. Boy, you just can't take that boy anywhere. Cobra, 2010 was a pretty dark year for you, but there was one bright spot. Tell us a little bit about Hunting Humans. It's such a great story.
Well, I'll tell you, that was one of the bright spots of 2010. I was sitting focusing back all the way till last year this time. Actually, I began focusing when you told me you were going to do this show to December the 1st, and I went through each and every single day. And, there's been some ups and down days, and there's been a lot of dark spots in there and different things, and I didn't end up justified the way I felt that I should have been. But, part of the thing going on is, one day I sat down and I just said, God, I surrender to you. I did the best possible thing that I possibly could do, and I conducted my life the way that I felt that I should do it. And I may have fallen short, and then I was reminded that I'm not Jesus. So about 3 days after that, I received a phone call from Greece. And I thought it was very odd that people wanted to interview me about bounty hunting. And I told them, I said, bounty hunting, there's no such thing as bounty hunting. It's an illegal activity for the most part. Do we hunt people? Yes, that jump on. So the lady was talking to me and said that, we had interviewed a bunch of bounty hunters. We've interviewed Dwayne Chapman. Of course, you know him as Dog, and Leonard Padilla. And she went on to name a bunch of names of people I'd never even heard of before, some 68 in total. And, I never even heard of these guys. So then she says, to me that we would like to come to United States and interview you. And I said, well, I'm not interested. The last time I messed with you media folks, I got in a lot of trouble and everything else. And if you was looking me up on the Internet, you sure found that out. So I'm really not interested. I hung up the phone. So a few days later, they persisted back and contacted me again. And I said, where are you people from anyway? And they said they were from Greece. And what made it kind of interesting to me, United States and the Philippines is the only two countries that you can actually put up for profit bail on an individual. Anywhere else in the world, it's illegal to make a profit off of bonding someone out of jail. They still have bonding. They still have that type of system. However, it's illegal to make profit from it. You can go bond your buddy out of jail and put up the money, but you can't profit on that. So they thought it was kind of like a uniqueness. And I started asking them questions about what have you done before, this type of thing. And the group was Mega TV. They're huge, and they're larger than CNN over here, and their audience is in the multiplied millions and millions of people. It's all of Europe. So basically it was a phenomenon to them, and they said they wanted to do a biography on my life. And I said, what kind of biographies have you done before? Well, they've done all the presidents, and they've done all the famous wars, but they've never done anything or run into a character quite like me. So they were at that they were at that rescue mission over there where the miners were trapped underground. They was actually set up on location there, and they left that location, and lo and behold, they were over here in Miami. So for 8 days, they went with me, and I took them around, and basically they did a full reach around of the entire process of a person arrested. Then they go before the judge, and the judge pronounces them on bond or, you know, or whatever, and then they go to a bondsman, and they get bonded out of jail. And then all of a sudden the 30 days elapses and they haven't responded back. And so then the bondsman goes and looks for him himself. And when he can't find them, then they call in the hunters. So, you know, and we went around and did a whole bunch of different things. And I asked them, what are you going to name this show? And they said, Hunting Humans. I said, oh, my God, that sounds like a good gig. So they aired this thing in Europe. The ratings were 11 to 15%, which were super, super high for something that's phenomenal to them. They don't even understand a thing. But the nice thing back on this side is Dick Clark Productions, Golden Gate Media, and about six or seven other ones right now are in the bidding war, if you will, to see if they want to give Cobra and his crew a show. And, you know, I've kind of been hesitant about it, even though the dollars, there's already attorneys jumped in there and put up all the contracts and all kinds of stuff. It all looks really, really good. But the thing of it is, you know, until 2007, I was very, very quiet. I didn't come out and do any radio shows or TV shows or anything like that. But one thing that is proven fact now, as far as the hunters go, I'm either in the top three or the top one of the three or something or another like that. So it was really interesting, and it kicked off really good. And I had some fun with it. I mean, it kind of brought back some sour memories because, you know, before this whole Haley thing, I was doing a Spike deal and a Discovery deal and a couple different deals. And, you know, I don't really want to teach America, you know, how we find bad guys, like the terrorists and this kind of things. And like Dave, you know, we don't want to share that, you know, but we'll share the fun stuff with you, you know, like, oh, my God, this guy did what? And you're after him for what? You know, it's kind of like intense. And anybody that's seen my work and compared against Dwayne, which, you know, I my hat's off to Dwayne. Anybody that'll get out of a nice warm bed and go hunt down a damn fugitive, you know, and leave his family and go do that, I mean, he's a good guy in my book, you know. It's just, and I got into it for the thrill of the hunt, you know, for the adrenaline rush, if you will. And then it became a job. And then it became, wow, after 8,000-plus captures, you know, I'm ready to write books and talk about it. You know, I just want to talk about it. Remember back in the day we used to do this, because anymore there's a lot of liability and there's a lot of things. And just soon after that, you know, I feel like I was on cloud nine again, and off to Wisconsin I went, and I had Walmart employees beat the living shit out of me in Walmart trying to apprehend the fugitive. I had the fugitive, but they took him away from me, beat my ass good. So now, you know, after I get done spending all the money that Walmart made on Black Friday, because I did find some very, very good. One thing that this show did for me more than anything else I got a group of some very, very good, intelligent attorneys that have come. In fact, we're taking on the insurance company and all the bad guys that were charging me with all the shit I got charged with and said I didn't get this and said I didn't get that, and Walmart and a couple other ones. So, you know, if I'm just going to be a litigator and a book writer from here on out, I believe. So, you know, I mean, you know, everybody gets his day, you know. It's been purity hell since this case started for a lot of folks.
Anyone that hasn't seen Hunting Humans, it is available on the internet. And I'll try and make sure that I put a link up to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
One thing, just in clarification of that, they wanted just to see the razzle-dazzle of, you know, hunting someone. But, you know, I wanted to share the whole industry because Dog and the rest of them leave out so much of the industry that people don't really understand how the process works. And basically, Denny would appreciate this. It's basically some mafia shit where people owe you money, and you can actually break in their house and take them to jail in the middle of the night because they owe you money. I mean, that's what it really breaks down to. But the whole process, part of our judicial system, otherwise our jails would be so full we wouldn't be able to put anybody in jail. So a bondsman is very important. And then, of course, somebody to hunt them back and get them back in jail if they decide not to come back, that's also a very important part of it as well. So it's very informative. It shows you the whole process. And if you took 68 minutes to watch it, you might find and have a different idea of what really goes on out there in the judicial system.
Oh, it is fascinating. Jen, another case that you covered this year was Ajidizia. Is there any word at all?
Not a word. He's been missing since exactly a month before Haley disappeared. He disappeared on January 10th, 2008, I think it was.
That was the Immokalee case, wasn't it? Immokalee,
or was
Florida?
It 9, 2009? Do what?
That's the Immokalee case, right? Out of Immokalee?
Right. I mean, he just disappeared, and he was out in his yard by his grandmother's. His grandmother was watching him while his mother was at work, and he was out playing in the yard like he normally did. And when they went to look for him, he just, just disappeared. But you don't hear nothing about it no more.
It's very transient in that part of the woods. It's only about 62 miles from me in Immokalee. It's a fruit-growing, vegetable-growing, pickers, that type of thing.
Yeah.
A lot of shipping and a lot of trucking going on. If you ever been out there in the middle of the night, it's in the middle of the Everglades. I mean, it is mosquito-infested, dark, gloomy. It's a scary place for an adult, let alone a child.
Yeah. Well, he disappeared, like I said, and he has never been found. So, you know, but also I'd like to say, Simon, if it's all right, you know, there's a lot of cases of missing children. And I wish, more than anything, that we could sit here and name off every one of them just to get their name out there. But we can't, unfortunately. So I do hope that everybody would remember these children and say their prayers for them and their families, you know, during these Christmas holidays. Make sure you remember them. When you sit down at Christmas dinner, say a prayer for them and just keep them in mind. Don't forget them.
Yeah.
Simon?
Go ahead, Denny.
Yeah, Jan's comment just reminded me of something on a show I do. We had last week for a guest, we had a gentleman named Dwayne Bowers, who is a grief and trauma counselor, and we wanted to talk to him with the holidays approaching about how families of missing or deceased, especially victims of violent crime, can best cope with the holidays through the holidays.
Denny, can you speak up a little bit?
Okay, any better?
Yes.
Okay, and Dwayne said that one of the problems that the families find is that other relatives or friends, when they meet for, you know, Christmas dinner or around the holidays, a lot of the friends and other family members think they're doing you a favor by not mentioning your missing or lost or deceased loved one. And that actually, according to him, is a wrong thing to do. You don't want to dwell on it, but on the other hand, it makes the surviving members of that family feel better to know that their loved one has not treated like they never existed. So
not forgotten.
A little tip that, yeah, that you don't want to forget them. And some people
right.
will even set a place at the table or put a candle at the spot where that person
right.
sits. So I just throw that out there if anybody's going to be in that situation over the holidays where someone has lost a loved one recently or has a missing child or that type of thing. Apparently there are ways you can handle what is a relatively uncomfortable situation to make it better or easier for the people closest to that missing or deceased person.
Sometimes it helps a lot just to talk about it. It really does something to you just to get it out and to be able to talk about it.
Jen, there was one more case that you were quite involved in.
Yes.
Zachary Freeman. Is there an update?
Zachary Pittman.
Zachary Pittman, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yes, actually there is no total update. All I know, I haven't talked to Christy in a couple of weeks now, but I know that he hasn't been found, and she has not given up. They still try to, organize searches and all that for it, and she's not going to give up. She's determined that she won't give up until she finds her son. She knows she's come to terms, or as best as she can at the moment, that he's no longer with her, but she still wants to find him so there can be some closure for her. And, it's rough on her, especially, at the holidays and stuff, but I'm a sucker for the holidays. I'm sorry. I get very sentimental with it. But, Christy, if you're listening to us right now, which you might be, I just want you to know we haven't forgot you, and we haven't forgot Zach, and we're praying for you and hope that he will be found soon.
5 months from now, a trial is going to start in Orlando. It's going to be Casey Anthony. This is set to be an absolute media circus. This one might even upstage O.J. Simpson's original murder trial. I want to go around the table and see what people think. Is this going to be the media circus to end all? Denny, your thoughts?
If it actually goes to trial, if there's no last-minute deal reached for a plea bargain, I think the same media that feasted on this case and covered it at the outset will be back in force. Yeah, and I think it's going to be quite a thing if it goes.
Peter, media circus, it's going to be piranhas running wild?
I think so. I don't think it will reach the national exposure that OJ had because we had the race card evolved, but my intention, I'm sure as you are, Simon, I plan on using statement analysis to absolutely cover it almost on a daily basis where everything is going to be analyzed. So it'll be fascinating. I would have bet there would have been a plea, but as people have said, I think rightfully, why should the state accept a plea after all that has gone on? But they have absolutely no case to defend there at all. It's crazy.
Oh, indeed. Cobra, you're kind of involved in this case. I don't think we need to quite get into the reason why. I don't believe you're on the witness list or anything. But do you see this as being the second coming of CNN?
I think a lot of people are going to have career changes on this job, on this case. I never rarely disagree with Peter, but, the race card was important in the OJ trial, but here you have a young mother
that's facing the possibility of a death sentence, and probably one of the, even the players that have been falsely accused in the case have come forward and begged the judge, you know, in a roundabout way and through media for have mercy on her, that they don't put her to death. But yeah, you got a young female mother, dumb, inappropriate behaviors, and just, you know, just different things. I mean, that topples the race card to me. I mean, especially when you talk female, and you know, here we're thinking about putting one to death if convicted, and if it goes that far, and if it doesn't reach some type of plea deal. But I did want to comment to you, Simon, on a story that you wrote. You caught a lot of flack for it, and I could clear some of that up if you wanted me to.
Sure.
Well, if most of the listeners recall that a few weeks ago, Simon had reported that there was some news coming out of Orlando, and basically what had happened was Jesse Grun and Richard Grun were set for deposition. And nobody knew about it because they only found out some 20-plus hours just prior to the happening. It was one of those spot-on-the-moment type depositions. But they did attend a deposition, and I don't have a copy of it. Richard has asked for a copy. They asked Reed or Wave, and he said he would read. The media hasn't gotten one. It hasn't been in the document dump yet. But I was not present at that, but I do trust Richard Grun. I believe that a person tells you the truth. As many times as Richard and I have had truthful conversations, that telling outright lies wouldn't be part of it. Now, he had told me that if it came up, the prosecution did not want it to come up, but if it came up, he was to answer their questions truthfully on the defense side. And in this particular deposition, Baez was not conducting the deposition, but his other partner there was, the older gentleman. I don't know his name. And the question was
Cheney?
Asked, I think it was Cheney, I think so. Like I said, I wasn't there, but I did have several conversations with Richard about it as to how it was unfolding. In fact, he was there a long time waiting for him to finish with Jesse. I think he started about 9:30 in the morning. I think Richard didn't get in until about 11:30 to noon hour. But Cheney brought in, you know, he brought in all the business about the bloggers talking, this, that, and the other, and a question came up, and don't quote me on this part of the story because I don't know it factually 100% correct, but basically Mr. Grun was asked that wasn't Lee considered to be his friend, or did he not trust Lee, and that opened the Pandora box right up, and he said absolutely not, I do not trust him, and I'm paraphrasing because I wasn't there. But basically what needed to come out and what we were told not to say anything about for all this time, now it's a matter of public record when it's factually disposed or written or have transcribed, was the fact that several months into early last year, Richard was contacted by Jim Hoover. Jim Hoover was a private investigator along with Dominic Casey. In fact, he was in the employ of Dominic Casey, and at that time it's believed that Dominic Casey was in the employ of Baez. And we heard on the media where Jesse Grun had made a statement that Casey had come over to his apartment to take a shower, and she didn't apparently need or look like she needed to take a shower, and he never acknowledged it. She went ahead to the shower room, and he stayed busy on the computer, thank God, because Jim Hoover contacted Richard Grun and told Richard Grun that he had some information for him and just didn't quite know how to get that information to him without bartering the trust, I guess, between him and Dominic Casey. So Richard called me and asked me to talk to Jim Hoover. And subsequently, we arranged a meeting outside of Orlando where nobody would see us. I drove from Miami to Orlando to a undisclosed location where Richard Grun was with me, and we met with Jim Hoover. And the only way we could put the deal together was that I had to pay Jim Hoover for his services. I think I paid him $200. So, in effect, he at that time was working for me. So, we asked him, what kind of information is it that you would like to share with us? And he recalled the conversation and the news media thing that she had been over to his house. And the purpose that he stated to Richard and I, that she was at the house trying to collect Jesse Grun's DNA. So we we kind of surmised that and thought, okay, we kind of thought that all along. She was there to do no good. But then he told us the story. Do you know where Lee was the past weekend or several weekends ago? We did not know. Well, Lee had traveled at the bequest, and he said, you know, and I'm not casting dispersions on anyone. This is just verbatim what he told us. And of course, we have viable proof to this conversation that Lee traveled to Atlanta, Georgia, where Jesse Grun was working for a private investigative agency. He couldn't get a job around Orlando because of all the media crap. So he went to Atlanta and scored himself a job. Well, Lee, at the bequest, according to Hoover, at the bequest of Dominic Casey, went to see Lee in Atlanta, Georgia. And his purpose there was to collect DNA evidence and fingerprints from Jesse Grun. And, of course, Richard and I are astounded. You know, they've went to a lot of trouble now. They've made two attempts to get his DNA and his fingerprints, and we're wondering, you know, of course, this is outside law enforcement. Otherwise, they would have collected already. So I asked Jim Hoover, I says, you know, I already suspect what I suspect, but I wanted to hear it from his mouth. And he believed what he told me, that they planned to come back with that DNA and fingerprints and somehow or another put them on the body. So then we knew that this whole Crump thing, Dominic Casey and Hoover and everybody else out there in the woods, they already had a very good idea where this body was, probably had already found this body, and now they needed to tie Jesse into it. And the reason they needed to tie Jesse into it, because Jesse was the only one suitable to, that was willing to marry this girl. They dated for about 17, 18 months. So Jesse was very much, and Richard Grun loved this little child, Kaylee, like if it was his own. He had already accepted his own grandchild. I mean, they were ecstatic, you know, Jesse would get married to her and everything else. And then show you how brutal this family is, turn around, that the only viable suspect aside from Casey they could come up with was to name Jesse as the murderer. And of course, you know, remember that National Enquirer had put Richard Grun in there as some type of sacrilegious ritual killer or something. You know, they offered this child up to God or something by a killing, which was insane. But they went a step further, and they were actually trying to frame my client's son, Jesse, for this murder. And that came straight from Jim Hoover. We suspected a lot of horseplay in the case, you know, but when he sat down with us and gave us that story, we, at that time, I told Richard, I said, Richard, I work for you. You tell me what to do with it. He said, I will go talk to the prosecutors. Apparently, prosecutors already had some kind of inkling about this, and they didn't want to get that out into the media to have more of a circus. And, you know, they don't want anything to upset the direction of this trial. So everybody was mum with the word. And, of course, I'm following what Richard says. You know, don't say anything. So I didn't say anything. But this came out, I think it was a week or so ago, it came out in the deposition that he was giving, so then at that time I was free to be able to say, yes, as a matter of fact, this is what Jim Hoover arranged a meeting, took payment from me for $200, and told us this whole big story about how they were trying to set up Jesse Grun with DNA and fingerprint evidence. So, to me, the whole damn nine yards of them are all something going on there, and, you know, it's like, you know, it's just crazy, man, that somebody would go to those extremes when, like the doc said there a little early, the crime doctor said, you know, had these folks just came out and said, look, you know, Zanny the nanny was really Xanax, and I gave her just a little bit too much, and she accidentally died on me. I was trying to party, and shit, I'm sorry. You know, maybe she's got a little more slap on the wrist, but the thing is, yeah, this is going to turn into a career maker for someone, and, you know, a multimedia blitz on everything and just jam us with all the stuff that we already pretty much already know. I mean, the child's dead, and whether Susie thinks that it's not the child or not, it is. I mean, it's the child. It's as simple as fact.
Right.
But I think there was a lot of players in this that knew where this child was, and if law enforcement had been able to have gotten to this body a little sooner, they would have probably found some more evidentiary material and that type of stuff. So I think that everybody played a part in this and withheld evidence. And Richard and I named it as creating reasonable doubt, that it's a plot to create reasonable doubt. Now, offering reasonable doubt to a jury is one thing, but to go out of your way to create reasonable doubt, to me, is tampering. To me, that's a crime.
Exactly.
I think those should be, those that have played into this should be punished. And it went further than that. Then the blogospheres got a hold of it, and they started planning little worms out there. There were a few people mentioned in this deposition. I'm not going to mention the names, but some of the bloggers were mentioned by name, and we had tracked down to find out real names and this, that, and the other. So they were mentioned and had been called out. And we're not so uncertain that, you know, just like the, this whole leak, all these leaks have been coming out. It is not out. This is my opinion only, and I want to state that, my opinion. I don't believe that the defense is the only one leaking information. I think that some of the prosecutors, you know, because in the prosecutor's office you have secretaries and people answer phones and you got helpers and everything else. Now, the chief prosecutor, would they leak? I doubt it. But there appears to be leaks coming from both sides, prosecutor's office and the defense, and for the simple reason one of the bloggers would always state that law enforcement already knows, and they would speak in law enforcement terms that only people in law enforcement would actually know. And when I saw that, I said, you know what, this guy's got the ear inside the prosecutor's office, and for whatever reason. We noticed some of that in the O.J. Simpson case, where some of the folks out of the prosecutor's office were actually leaking out some of the information, then they cry foul if it goes off on the other side. But I think that it's like any kind of a sporting event. You, both sides will do certain things and this, that, and the other. But I found it very, very bad. I can't put words around it, that somebody would actually go to that trouble to actually frame up someone else for a murder, and, you know, and nobody would jump down and throw some folks in jail for that kind of shit. You know what I mean? But let them go out and try to find a little missing child and watch how fast you go to jail. You know? Shit.
Let me jump in for a second. Dave, I'm going to put you on the spot because you know absolutely nothing about this case. But when you hear stories like this, I mean, does it give you pause for thought about, you know, what the hell goes on in our legal system?
Exactly, how can, you know, a family try to implicate somebody else for some type of killing like this, whether it's accidental or not, is beyond understanding to me.
Peter, I know that you kind of sort of covered the depo story, and you're probably not very happy with me because, you know, I wouldn't spill all of the beans, but you've now heard it. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I don't think Over would tell any fabrications anyway, but I understood completely and didn't want you to reveal anything about sources. What Cobra has said, I think, even parts of it that he may not know is true, I believe to be true, because Cindy herself said to us, if we were listening, that there was no part of her DNA, or Casey's DNA, nor her family's DNA on Kaylee's body. And what in the world would make her think of such a thing other than this type of crazy plot?
Thank you,
that's
buddy.
One. So
thank
we have the,
that's
yeah,
right.
We have the linguistic confirmation. Then number two is this family produced Casey. This family is we throw around the word dysfunctional way too easily. This family is homicidal. Recently, River Cruz came out and said that she talked about a time when George took Casey when she was out on bond by the throat and throttled her. This is a violent, nutty family, and Lee and Casey, no matter how you look at it, when you saw them high-five each other, these are two wacky individuals who with criminal mindsets like Cindy's, I'll tell you what, I think it's true. I think it did happen, and I'm standing on that. I think this story is true, and I think they tried to pin it on Jesse, and that is an attempted murder because this is a capital crime. This is a capital case. And so what they're looking to do is say, let's put Jesse Grund to death in the place of Casey Anthony.
There you go.
And,
well,
I'll
tell you, Peter, I would take any type of voice analysis, lie detector test, anything, and put Hoover on the other side. And, of course, Richard Grund was there present at that meeting with me. And Richard Grund is he's not saying he's a more godly man than I am, but I guess being he's a preacher or a pastor, I would say. But here's the thing. We got absolutely no reason to make up that story. We got no axe to burn with none of them and try to get anybody in trouble or anything like that. This is what Hoover put across to us. And then you have to ask yourself a question. What the hell was she doing there at his place? And some of these little things came out before. And why did Cindy say there was nobody's DNA on that body? Why would she say those kind of things? And it's just been on and on and on. It's been throwing these things out there, get somebody else. And you're right. Try to put that on my client's son to give him the death sentence. And, you know, it's just crazy. It's ruined this young buck's life. And it's just, it's insane. And I was pissed because I had to keep this quiet. I couldn't say a damn word because I got to be faithful to the person that I represent, which was Richard. And he was told by law enforcement either they already knew something like this, or they didn't want to muddy the water with it, but they were looking into it or whatever they were doing. But we weren't allowed, I wasn't allowed to say a damn thing until he was disposed. And even on that day, until it actually came out, if it hadn't came out in the thing, and see, one reason I wanted to say all this, not that I was Johnny on the spot and it was right there, but the reason I wanted to say it is Simon and Jan took a beating on this thing and figured that, oh, you know, here they go again, they're bullshitting. One thing you'll find out about me, I've never bullshitted about any of the stuff that I've said. It sounds so weird and so crazy and so left field, but you know what? Those are the players and the characters that we're dealing with. And they are some weird people. All we do is to say, this is what we heard, this is what we witnessed, and this is what we saw. You know, to make anything up would probably give them credit. You know, probably credit
okay.
to them.
Benny, I'm not sure that you have heard much of this story before. What's your initial reaction?
Okay, Simon, before I answer that, I just want to tell you, I have one of my former mob associates here with me. I have to take to the airport in a couple of minutes, so after my answer, I'll be jumping ship. And I want to wish you, Jan, my co-panelists, and all your listeners a very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Now, regarding your question, no, I wasn't familiar with what's just been disclosed here, but it does not surprise me. And as Peter said, I believe, you know, I don't have any problem accepting that as the truth because knowing the players, from what I know of them...
Benny, can you speak up?
Knowing the players or what I know of them, I would not put anything past them. And I'm talking about, you know, that whole game. And I say this in all sincerity. When the dust settles with this thing, if, first of all, I hope the authorities are looking into whether or not there's been any obstruction on the part of the Anthony family, any witness tampering, any attempt to frame anybody. And if they're looking into it, and they should be, and they can prove it, then there had better be charges filed against the perpetrators. I don't care about a grieving grandmother and all that crap. If they've committed crimes, they need to be held accountable, and it damn sure better happen.
Indeed.
You heard for the mob on that one, my friend. That was the mob speaking right there. Shit better happen.
Okay, everybody, Merry Christmas to y'all, and Simon,
Merry Christmas.
Thanks for letting me be on with you.
Merry Christmas, Benny.
It is unfortunate that we just lost Benny. I had a whole pile of questions for him, but I'll do the question and answer myself. Okay? His upcoming book, Surviving Mob, is sitting in warehouses right now, and hopefully it will be available on Amazon this week. And for those of you... not familiar with the book. It involves the biography of a fairly well-known gentleman, Andrew DiNardo, who was part of the Gambino family. Andrew's been off the grid for a little while due to some other pressing engagements. I don't think I'll go further than that, but it does not involve jail time. Okay. Let's go back to the Casey Anthony story. Jan, I mean, do you think that justice is going to be served in May?
Not sure. It depends. Now, I do believe that Casey Anthony is guilty, and I think that if she's found guilty, and then maybe yes. But if she gets off of this, no. Because I know, there's just no doubt in my mind that she's the one that did this to her daughter. And as Cobra said, too, you know, that if, I forgot now how I was going to say this. I don't know, but if she's found guilty, which I do think she is, and I think that they shouldn't cut no deal with her. If they do cut, I know what it is, what I was going to say. See, you caught me off guard again, Simon. You always do that to me. But if, Simon, go ahead.
Okay, all right. While Jan,
I get my thoughts together.
Right. Okay, Peter, I'm going to point the question to you. Number one, do you think that Kaylee Anthony is going to get some justice in May? And number two, if that justice is meted out the way that I sincerely hope it will be, do you see ancillary prosecutions? You know, certainly Cindy and George, maybe Lee, maybe even some legal folks. What's your thoughts? Oh. Now Peter's not talking to me either. Okay.
Okay, I can remember. Let me take it up to back what I was saying, that if Casey is, if they're saying that this is an accident, like Cobra was saying, you know, if they say that this was an accident, why didn't they just, I mean, if it was an accident, why didn't they just say it and bring it out, and then she just got a slap on the hand or whatever, and, you know, she says she's sorry and all this. But the point remains that she didn't report this baby missing for 30 days. And I don't care if it was an accident. I don't care what the case may be. She did not report that. And regardless, if it was an accident, if they come out now and with a plea bargain trying to say, well, she killed her by accident, so she shouldn't get this and she shouldn't get that, I don't believe that that's true. She should get it because she has put the taxpayers through hell, the prosecution through hell, the public that's not even paying the taxes in Florida through hell. I mean, she has caused more friction by keeping quiet in all this, that she deserves to stay behind bars for the rest of her life, even if it was an accident.
Okay, Cobra, I'm going to throw the same question at you. You know, do you think that if she's found guilty, the feds might go after some other people for other crimes?
I think that if they don't, well, here's the first thing. First of all, I believe they're already doing their investigation because that's, you know, this didn't shock a lot of people. And as far as getting after them, yeah, they need to, because justice is supposed to be blind, right? It's supposed to be blind, no peeking, no messing with it. And somebody's had their finger on the scale trying to change the outcome of what we know to probably be the truth, you know. Maybe it was an accidental killing, but if it was, or an accidental homicide, and if it was, then let it play out like that. But to try to go and get somebody's DNA just because the fella loved her and this other family really cared, and to try to throw them under the bus, and, you know, God forbid, had we not been in a position to find these things out, and this had went forward, and they would have been successful in getting this young fella's DNA, only think of what would have happened then, because scientifically, we believe scientific evidence more so than we believe what's coming out of somebody's mouth. So
right.
If they were able to successfully have done that, this young man would have been sentenced to death very possibly.
And the real person, and the guilty would be out.
Exactly, the real perpetrators would have been gone. And, you know, how can people live with themselves? Now, in saying that, I do believe that Jim Hoover told me and Grun the truth when he told that to us, because I was doing the Peter Hyatt listening, okay? And he was questioned. This interview was conducted for probably better than an hour. In fact, it was longer than that. But I didn't just take it one time and hear it. I made him repeat it and repeat it this way and repeat it this way. And each and every time that we were told the story, we were flabbergasted. They're like, oh, my God. And I believe that Crump and all of them have a little bit more into this than what they say they do and what has been reported in the media. Now, whether law enforcement is on top of that or not, I don't know. But, you know, I just thank God that Jesse is not facing the daggum death chair had they been successful in this undertaking. And whether it's true or not, whether, you know, because I wasn't there checking, doing this and doing that, but he told a story to me that I believe to be true, and he said that it was propagated by the defense and by the other investigator, and that somebody needed to look into it. Now, if he made this up and practiced it and rehearsed it to where he fooled us and said, you know, this was all just one big lie, then Jim Hoover needs to go down there and be arrested and put in there for doing his part in it. But as far as what I believe the man told me the truth. And you know, whether or not they're able to get to the bottom of this whole damn thing. But, you know, that's very scary that somebody could put their finger on the scale of justice and turn the events around had they been successful, had they actually got DNA and fingerprints or whatever the hell and put them on this body. That would have been some real shit. That would have been some real shit. And who would have, and you know, there's a lot of people out there. There's people in the media. They like me, and some don't like me. You know, maybe I'm not the way, you know, jump in there and do it. I'm kind of rough and gruff. But you know what? I find the information out. You know, I end up getting the information in there to where an innocent man was saved in this thing, as far as I'm concerned.
Peter, are you still with us? He's showing on the switchboard, but he's being mysteriously quiet. Peter, if you can...
analyzing my shit, that's what he's doing.
Right. Peter, if you can hear me, hang up and dial back in.
He's doing voice analysis right now.
Right. Oh, he probably is. He's
analyzing
the whole bunch of...
Dude, I know he is. I mean, that's his job. That's what he does. You know, I didn't say that's what he did. That's what he does. Present tense.
Okay, analyze my words. I get twisted all the time.
You're the easiest to analyze, honey. You're the very easiest. You're easier than the rest of us. I love it when they get all stumbled. A flustered person trying to interview a flustered person, just like trying to interview these folks that are on all this dope. It's difficult. I mean, it's difficult.
What does 2011 hold for you? Are you hoping for good things?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I always stay positive. Listen, I've been through hell in a handbasket twice. And, I'm praying that everything returns to normal like it was probably like back in 2006, 2007. You know, and life is good and, you know, all the bills are paid and ain't nobody trying to hang me for some bullshit and they're after the bad ones. And I try to stay positive. I mean, this year, the end of 2009, the beginning of 2010, there was a few times when I didn't know if I was going to wake up and see the sunshine the next day. I mean, it's been hell. You know, and I didn't lose a child in this, but somehow I lost myself, you know, and I lost a lot, you know. And I ain't bellyaching about it. I didn't know what I was getting involved with when I got involved in it. That I'll tell you, be truthful. But I'm the kind of person that once I get involved in something, I took it personally, and I should have never, you know, a good investigator never makes a case personal to himself, never does that. And when you do that, you have to step away. That's why they always put you on desk duty. If it's a member of your family that something happened, you have to be a cop. They won't let you investigate it because it's personal. You want to shoot the first bastard you see. So probably somebody should have gave me desk duty when they found out I got personal in the case and trying to solve. It was like at one point, Haley was my child. It was one point that Grun's family was my family, you know, and I got knee-deep in it quick. You know, like, they're not, I'll be damned if they're going to do this to my friends and my family. And in that, I forsake my own better judgment and some of my own friends that were close to me. And, you know, and I, at a time, blamed them. You know, why did you guys leave me out here flapping? Well, at that time, people were telling me, get the hell out of there. The walls are closing in on you. The window of opportunity is leaving you. You're going to get trapped into this thing, and you're going to end up in trouble. Be careful. You know, so a lot of people gave me the good word, but Simon, after I got in it, damn it, it's like getting stuck in quicksand, saying, God damn, you're in quicksand, get out. And you, I can't, I'm stuck. Shit, throw me a rope. So, it's changed me to the point where I'm not going to do any more pro bono cases. I'm sorry. Best leave that shit up to law enforcement. It's just too risky. There's too many angry wolves roaming around, and the minute you try to help somebody, even with the best of intentions, and the press, I mean, hell, I even bought and paid for the damn press to come down there to make sure they got the story right, and they turned on me like a bunch of thieves. I'm like, good God. We won't mention any names, but we know who they are. It was better the story to say this, or it was better to report the story this way and twist this and twist that, and rather than just report on the truth of things. And, you know, I learned a lot. You know, I thought the press would be a good thing to get the little girl's face out there. In fact, a lot of your listeners, and a lot, in fact, you guys too, were for the efforts of what I had did originally, and then it kind of mushroomed from there. But you know, at my money and some other folks' money that put in on the damn thing, and got some of those press people back in there, the press basically had walked away from this, and now I know why. You know, now I know
right.
why. You know,
okay,
I should have walked away.
We're running close to out of time, but there is a question I want to ask, and I'm going to ask Jan first, just because she loves me putting her on the spot. But the whole Casey Anthony deal, all right? Casey ran out of money. Should the taxpayer be footing the defense bill?
Okay, well, that is a good question, and personally I say no under the circumstances. Everybody deserves legal counsel, whether you can afford it or not. If you can't afford it, usually the courts appoint you a lawyer. But, I mean, look at other cases. I can't name any right offhand, but other cases that people go and they'd be in charge with this and can't afford a lawyer. So they get a court-appointed lawyer, which usually does not fight to get what you to prove your innocence or whatever. You don't usually get a good counsel from a court-appointed lawyer. Sometimes you do. I'm not saying that they don't always, but they don't usually go out of their way because of the court cost. You know, I mean, the cost of everything. There's a limit to it. So they don't get the better
representation.
Right, because of that. So why should she be any different? I mean, if she's not paying these lawyers and he keeps pulling in these high-powered lawyers from out of state and all this, why should he be allowed to spend more on her case than any other court-appointed lawyer would? Or what is it they call it whenever they don't pay?
A public defender.
Why should she be any different?
Well, boy, I tell you what, you opened up a can of worms there. I call them public pretenders for the most part, but here's the dealio. You talk about a mistrial. You talk about a way to have this thing go on a lot longer. If that defense does not provide her, it's like this in the judicial system. Better to let 9 guilty people go free than to put 1 innocent person behind bars. That's our principle. And according to the Constitution of the United States, if you cannot afford representation, you are at the mercy of the taxpayers on that to get it there. Now, if we we may not agree with it, in her case, of lying and all these different things. However, if we take all in that, then we're in the wrong country, because that's basically what our forefathers put together when they crafted the Constitution.
Okay, I have to break in. We're about to lose our live listeners, but fear not. The entire recording will be available. So don't worry if you get booted. You won't have missed a thing. It will be on the recording. Okay, Cobra, you were saying.
Well, I was saying, you know, I mean, I understand where Jan's coming from, but on the other side of that coin, I have to stand for what America stands for, and everybody is supposed to be afforded the best legal defense. Now, there are some pretenders out there, guys that won't take it, you know, especially in a non-publicized trial, they don't pull out all the bells and whistles. The media is helping the taxpayers to go further into debt on this one. If it was a normal case, no, they wouldn't be pulling out all these bells and whistles.
Yeah, but if they requested more money, they don't get it. I mean, they don't
to.
Always
then
get
that's
the
a
mistrial. Money.
Well, in those cases, because, you see, justice is not fair in this country. There are some loopholes. I read another little article, Simon, that you put up a few days ago. Justice is, in my opinion, based on what I used to never feel this way. I never did. But I feel this way now. Justice is how much can you afford, period, and end of story. If you can afford the dream team like O.J. had in the first go-around, had he had the dream team in the second go-around, he would have got off on that one as well. I don't care how well they had him. That dream team would have got him off. It's how much justice can you afford, bottom line. And, I even hate to even say that, but I've experienced it firsthand, and that was one of my downfalls, is I had spent all of my money trying to find a child that when I got in trouble, I didn't have money to bring in the $100,000 lawyers. Not that my attorney didn't do a good job, he did. But if I'd have been able to take the thing full course and had a whole damn dream team in there, we would just outspent the local government. And, you know, whether or not they would have seen that as justice, at least I would have got mine. You know what I mean? It's just... You know, I understand where Jan's coming from, but as long as we reside in this great country that we call United States of America, we're entitled to all the provisions under the Constitution, which allows you, when you don't have money, to have a court-appointed attorney. And being that I'm in a vehicle, I couldn't get one. So, you know, so this girl must not have anything, because you can't own anything in order to get one.
Okay, I do need to wrap this up with... completely out of time.
You don't get credit for the lack going into this show where they didn't get us on right away?
Right. But I do want to go around the table. Peter, are you still with us?
I'm back, thanks, yeah.
Oh, you're back. do you have any parting thoughts for us?
Well, I do. Simon and Jen, I think you did a terrific job covering these important cases for 2010, and I hope that we're all privileged to be part of Excellence in Journalism. I think you do a great job, so I appreciate being included in it.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah,
someone said something nice about us.
I'm thrilled.
Dave, do you have us back? Are you back on the line with us?
I am.
Oh,
yeah,
Dave. I was just about to go to you and talk about your books and you know, the war on drugs and the war on terror, and you took off presumably to get a beer.
No, I could hear you, but just couldn't talk.
we're completely out of time, but I do want to thank you so much for joining us today. Are you going to be back in town over Christmas?
I am. First Christmas I'll have home in several years.
Good for you.
All right. You can bet your bottom dollar that I'm going to get you and Denny Griffin on a radio program. So... thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay. And Mr. C, your parting thoughts for the day?
I just pray that everybody has a safe and happy holiday. And if you drink, don't drive, do the watermelon crawl.
There you go.
All right. I do want to thank Denny Griffin and TJ Hart for joining us. This is Simon and Jan Barrett wishing everyone a great day and a very, very Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
You'll notice that none of that politically correct bullshit. It is Christmas.
Good for you.
Goodbye, everyone.
We will see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.